Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Lifestyle's Foxtel channel, or even Foxtel's Lifestyle channel. How many times do I do that? And he's Ben Kingsley, the chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the reigning and current Property Investment Advisor of the Year. Hello, mate.
G'day, buddy. How are you?
Very, very well, thanks. The tash is looking very spectacular.
The moustache is coming along, so thank you to those who've reached out and donated. Trying to get to $2,000. That's my target. So if you haven't donated, go to the website. If you like the podcast, then give me $10. That'd be great. It all helps. Men's health.
Is there two funds to your raising here? One is to afford the hotel room that you have to stay in each night because Jane won't let you inside, and the other is to raise money for the wonderful course.
Oh, I've got a bit of a cough at the moment, so I'm in the spare bedroom the last couple of nights, so she's kicked me out already.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with the cough, it's everything to do with the tash. So, mate, it's been an interesting week in the world of property. It looks like clearance rates here in Melbourne have been down for the third week in a row, which is probably not a bad thing for... Yep. Property investment in general, and as you say, take the speculators out of the market?
Yeah, supply is up, which is normally, we know when supply reaches this sort of spring and coming into early summer season, that it's a good indicator in terms of the interest and the buying depth in the marketplace. And we're starting to see, more so in Sydney than Melbourne, that buying depth is not there now. There's still... And which is a good segue into what we're going to talk about today, but there's still good interest in 3 and 4 bedroom freestanding houses because that's where the scarcity is at the moment, but not so much in the apartments and the new stock. So it's a good message, and it just goes to show that, you know, that's our best leading indicator in terms of what's happening in the good areas around the cities through auctions, especially Melbourne and Sydney.
Yeah, and talking to the agents on the ground, you know, it's interesting to understand when, you know, you could see this, you know, people can get into a false sense of security that if the market's coming off a bit, they go, well, the market conditions have changed. But in the areas that we're buying in, we're already buying in scarcity areas. So therefore, the agents are just saying, instead of having 8 bidders, we've got 3.
Yeah.
But even with 3 bidders, you've still got competition. Correct. So it's middle and fringe suburbs that are going to be affected hugely by that. But the really good stuff, if you've got scarcity in mind, which is the topic of today, will serve you very, very well during these times.
And so when you are out in the field, guys, and you are saying, you know, how much interest is in this property, try and ask the agent if it's owner-occupier interest or if it's other investors. Like if you're just constantly fighting against investors, that should be a little bit of a signal to you that's probably not the area that I need to be. Because once the investors go out the market, that's when the corrections will occur. So, we're big on owner-occupier appeal, so make sure that you're fighting against owner-occupiers who want to live there as opposed to investors who think it's good value for money, because it might be good value for money indefinitely.
Very, very good tip. Now, I guess what it means is for the industry as a whole, I think, you know, APRA has put in some, some handbrakes to help stall the market, which is a good thing. I think that the interest rates going up is, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago, you said it does, you know, one interest rate movement in 1 week and doesn't tell a story. But I think overall sentiment, from what I can tell on the ground, has been dulled a little bit. I don't think it should discourage people, but it's dulled a little bit.
It has, and look, the media can't have a level playing field in property. They can either have a boom or a bust. So expect to see more negative commentary around the property market, which is obviously going to affect those who don't have the confidence. And to be brutally honest, I'm loving it. The less amount of people that are interested in property investment, because let's think about it like this. Remember, we've talked about 70% owner-occupied, 30% investor. When we're seeing numbers of 40% and 50% investor, that's unsustainable. It means speculators are in the market. So, you know, for those listening to this podcast, unless you really like the people and you want to see them create financial freedom by passing on your knowledge and your wisdom, tell everyone else, no, property's dead. Because, you know, the less competition you have, it's not like buying BHP shares. Do you know what I mean? You can't just go in there and buy a small portion of it. It's a big investment. So I don't mind it. I think from a sustainable point of view, and we do our best buying when there's fear in the marketplace.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to quote a Warren Buffett quote, because no one ever does this, do they? But be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So I think that, you know, in terms of my focus in Melbourne, I had been less focusing on Melbourne over the last 6 months because there's been other opportunities.
Yep.
But if the sentiment comes off, continues to come off, mate, we'll be cherry picking big time. The best blue chip assets in Melbourne, because they are, you know, short term is 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, look, I think Sydney will come out on our radar in the next 12 to 18 months as well. I think there'll be some good buys in that marketplace as well. So all good news.
Anyone who knows me, Ben, knows that I love a good framework. I think that if you don't know your topic, if you can't explain your topic simply, you don't know it well enough. And we always talk about a couple of filters and frameworks. And three that basic filters that we talk about when we're buying a property is owner-occupier appeal, investment grade, and scarcity. And you're doing a talk today to a bunch of financial planners, and you've unpacked the scarcity factor to some detail, and it's probably really good to share with our listeners.
Yeah, I thought it was just a good message, and it's a timely message. So buying property in a slow market and sort of getting long-term capital growth out of that particular area all comes down to supply and demand. Mm. So if there's scarce supply, there's a greater chance, factoring in investment grade and obviously owner-occupier appeal, that you're going to get a good result. So let's get into unpacking it.
Yeah, far away. It's probably worth mentioning that there's two parts to it, isn't it? There's the scarcity of location and then scarcity of assets. So let's kick it off with location.
Yeah, and in terms of explaining this, there's going to be a bit of crossover. I mean, we don't have visual aid, obviously, with this podcast, but we believe that 80% of your return comes from the area you buy, and 20% comes from the property. That's a rough rule of thumb. And then when you get scarcity in the actual property stock, so character home or something, that can tweak that. So you can actually get some return on the actual physical asset. But let's start from the top. So I need to explain this first one, because this is the one that's probably the hardest to explain. But I want you to think about it like this. When the most expensive land all around the world is in the CBD, in locations where there's the ability to build a high rise, okay? Because obviously when we're talking about per square meter of dirt, we know that in Tokyo, London, New York, that land is as an absolute premium because of the value add that they can put on the land. So that correlates also to residential property, in the sense that if you are in an elite area, an area that has great status and has huge owner-occupier appeal, then what I'm talking about here is what we call backfill. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's about sort of saying that there are owner-occupiers who are willing to buy that period property or that great asset for the land content, and even though they're going to pay a premium for the house, they're going to bowl it over and build something else on that land. So that is the pinnacle of the commercial viability of that land. It's saying to them that they'll actually pay extra for the dwelling on top of it, even though they don't want the dwelling. That says that that land comes at an absolute premium. So areas that are close to the CBD, but also have beach appeal and proximity, are their absolute bee's knees in any city and even regional town around the world. And that's where the area focus is our number one interest.
So, for example, the mansion that Packer built in Vaucluse in Sydney with his wife Erica, where he bowled over a bunch of houses and built this gargantuan, and then recently sold it because the marriage went pear. But that's a classic example of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then there's also the one in Toorak recently where, you know, there was uproar from the locals. It didn't have an overlay on it, a heritage overlay. So it was a fine house that could have been restored, but it was bought by a Chinese national, and they'd ugly. So they wanted to build what they wanted to build.
Well, the challenge with that is they bowled over this mansion that most people in their lifetime would aspire to and never ever be able to step foot into. And here he is going, just absolutely demolishing the people's dreams for a new one.
It's all relative. I mean, we just saw that painting sell for over $100 million at Christie's auctions this week.
That was an honest buy. Was that you?
No, that wasn't me. You know, it was a Chinese cab driver.
Really?
Yeah, so he was a cab driver out of New York City. I don't know what other investments he did, but that's probably what he started as. So good luck to him. And if he can afford a naked lady on his wall, which is apparently a pretty risque image, but I don't know where you put that one.
I've heard of the limo driver who takes the billionaire to wherever he wants to go every day, taking all the little notes about what I should buy, but I haven't heard of the cab driver doing the same thing.
Did that. But that's about scarcity, and that is the pinnacle of scarcity. And we talk about it with cars and certain types of elements. When it becomes, you know, something that is authentically old and in rare supply, or that Ferrari, that $12 million Ferrari that was burnt out, you know, the 1972 Ferrari, you know, what an 8 or 10 of them in the world, I don't know how many it was, but there you go. Why was it worth $12 million? Because it was rare.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about. It's just that rare land in that amazing location. That's the number one area for location areas focus.
Very good. Next one is proximity to the CBD for employment reasons, for income reasons, largely.
Yeah, it is. It is. So unless you've got a chopper, like, you know, Lynn Fox, Lindsay Fox, he can jump onto his chopper and fly to his city building and then off to his Essendon airport down to Sorrento. But for the rest of us mere mortals, proximity to the city is absolutely important. For one is that if we want to earn high incomes to be able to afford these properties, we want convenience and the ability of choice of job that allows us to get there. So that's why we congregate closer to that amenity, and inside that city location usually is the arts and the culture stuff that we're also looking for. So, you know, the wine bars, the great restaurants, the theatre, those types of things that make our lifestyle better. We don't want to be travelling an hour and 40 minutes to get into that, to enjoy that.
And I think that an amplification of that is depending on the city, combining CBD with something else. So if I'm in...
Great call.
If I'm in Brisbane, it's not city and beach because the beach isn't so great. Yeah. It's just a city and river. If I'm in Perth, well, there's the Golden Triangle in Perth because it's jammed between the beach, the city and the river.
Yep.
And then if you go to Adelaide, they place huge value on beach location. Yep. So being in between the city and the beach. So if you can amplify that with another driver, that just makes it even more scarce.
And I think the observation that if I can make a quick one, is that Adelaide is an example. It's because there's no real congestion yet. So if you get congestion,
city.
if you can get congestion, then ultimately scarcity closer to that city location becomes more and more important over time. So you've got to think when you're buying, not just for the next 2 years, 5 years, but factor out 20 years of what you're about to buy. And if there is going to be scarcity, there is going to be population growth. So that's going to create even more congestion and more traffic. So hence the things like rail, light rail, those types of things, easy access to a city location is going to be more and more important.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that a lot of Brisbane people don't necessarily place the same value on a train as you do in Melbourne or Sydney. But like you say, think 10 years ahead. That'll change.
Yeah, exactly. The next one down is land fully utilised. So, you know, land is obviously the thing that we can't create more of unless we're knocking down mountains and pushing it out into the ocean like they do in Hong Kong and even parts of Dubai. But we're not about that. What we're sort of saying here is land is, if it's fully utilised land, then the land becomes scarce. If it's outer suburbs and new subdivision, there's no scarcity in that. So, you know, overlay is basically all the land being fully utilised, and if it has, that's a good sign.
Yeah, no, our good friend Peter Koulizos, the property professor, talks about the three L's, location, land and looks. So I think that plays into it very well. If you can be in an area where there's no extra land, once you've got location right, then there's land scarcity. That's a huge driver.
I like those three L's.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, location, land and looks.
Yeah, so there's that owner-occupier appeal. Mm-hmm. There's the location and the land. Obviously, land is where the value lives.
Yep.
Sounds great.
And then when you know, you're sort of going, well, if I'm going to buy a townhouse, well, it's comparing the land component within townhouse. And then for me, looks is around context. And I always think that real estate is all about context. I'm looking at this house in isolation, if I can take a step back, In context for the rest of the suburb, how does this one work? So I've got the location right, and I've got the land size right, but I might be in a street full of period homes, and this is the only one that's a post-war. Well, then that's you only satisfy 2 out of 3.
Love it. Strict planning regulations. So what we find is the neighbours don't like change. So in the really elite areas, They don't want high density. They don't want medium density. They actually quite like the street the way it is. Mm. And they obviously lobby council for you know, no change. We've all seen those signs up in front gardens that we protest against appropriate development or major development. That's the type of stuff that we're talking about here. So I think from that point of view, is if those planning guidelines are tight, then that's creating that scarcity. It's putting a limit in terms of what can go into that area. So, you know, if that's overlaid in the suburb that you're living in, then that creates that further scarcity.
Doesn't Bernard Salt call that NIMBYism? Not in my backyard.
Yes, that's what it is. Not in my backyard.
Yeah, very good. And then you've got a mix of old and new subdivisions. So where you've got the old making way for a bit of the new, but yep. Obviously that means that there's a little bit less land scarcity than the ones prior.
Yeah, it does. I mean, with this one here, there's sort of a combination of the two. You can see some areas where it's been industrial be rezoned, and that rezoning can create a new level of availability, which is good. You know, so we've seen it happen in Richmond where the old was it GTV9, you know, sort of subdivision there. They've knocked that over and now building townhouses, but don't be fooled and it's happened in Botany in Sydney, and it happens, you know, in areas where they want to put more residential, because in reality, once the commercial industrial areas, or the industrial areas mainly in the factory areas, once they become inefficient, meaning that pulling trucks in and out of the streets and all that because of the congestion, then they'll rezone that, and those new factories and that new industrial area will be built out where they can connect to the arterials quicker.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing. So we're seeing here the fish market, the flower markets and the fruit markets down the sort of Port Melbourne area, that all being redone because of exactly that. It's like, okay, we're going to build it out in Epping because it's just easier and more convenient to get that distribution happening around the area.
And the land's too valuable. There's an example in an inner city Melbourne suburb that we like in the inner western suburbs that has beautiful period homes, but it's got a Legoland as part of it.
Yeah.
And we avoid the Legoland section of it, which is the new part, because we don't think it stacks up. So that's probably the fundamental downside of the mixing old and new subdivisions, because the new stuff, it lacks that scarcity of look, if we go back to the three L's.
Correct. And you might also see this occurring in middle ring areas where there might have been a large government facility and that government facility is now tired. So in a case would be Bundoora and McLeod there, where there was the old Mont Park, which was a mental hospital, and Kennett sold it off. And it became a development, and they've built a thing called Springthorpe, and that was a high end area near the, you know, it was only a 10-minute drive into the hospital there. I'm just trying to think of the name of the hospital now. It's the Olivia Newton John Cancer Clinics there. I think I was actually even born there, and I can't think. The Austin Hospital just came to me.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, 44 years ago. So that's the type of thing that we're sort of talking about there. So you can have properties that were built, you know, the old three bedroom, one bath brick veneer, and now all these new subdivisions are coming in around it. And so you'd be buying the older stock to get the drag up value over time as that new subdivisions come through and those new houses are built. So that's, you know, in the scale of things, it's down the end, but there's still some scarcity there, and that's how you can potentially make some money in that area.
Well, if given the choice, it's better than probably the next one, medium density, where you've got usually along busier roads, where you've got maybe four or five level apartments with cafes and everything underneath. We actually don't buy that type of stock, so which is why it's at the bottom of our scale in terms of location. But we actually rely on that sort of stock, don't we? Because it's part of the strategy is to say, well, that will drive, you know, if we think about human interest, human behaviour and economic activity, the human interest is largely around, well, what are they going to do when they're not working? And if there's a wine bar or there's a Chinese restaurant or something nearby that medium density zoning allows, we rely on that, but we don't buy that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the tipping point. We're now at the stage where we don't touch this. Mm. There's no scarcity in medium and high density stuff.
Mm.
So this is hence at the bottom of the scale, because but we do love what it brings to an area.
The challenge for property investors with medium density zoning is it gets the most publicity because the guys that are doing the moving of that get the biggest budgets and therefore they can get to talk to the most people. So it's really the vulnerable space. And as someone who looks at portfolios a lot, you'd see a lot of people with either medium density or high density stuff.
Yeah, or off the plan stuff, which has no scarcity at all. Mm. So new subdivision, greenfield estates. Absolutely.
So the last one on the location scale is high density zoning. The biggest challenge is it just doesn't have scarcity whatsoever. So if you even think about a developer who's got the last piece of dirt available in a central business district location, there's still no scarcity because they can go as high as the flying regulations will allow them to go. And if you think about Dubai and you think about the Gold Coast, how they've got very tall towers with a light on the top, so the plane doesn't crack into them. So even if you've got scarcity of land at the bottom, there's no scarcity going into the sky.
Correct. And this is where the developers make their money. Mm. So go back to the very first point about the backfill. You know, there'll always be an older building in a city that if bought well at $30 million for the building, they can still make money because they can get 60 stories out of it. As well as the underground parking that's going to be a rent roll. So that's the point for them. But for us humble residential investors who can't raise the 30 mil to buy it and the 200 mil to build it, we don't play in that space. So that's where they make their money. But we as smaller investors make our money through the scarcity of those better locations.
We spend most of the time on this podcast talking about location because it's a very central theme to our podcast that location does 80% of the grunt work for you, or as we say, the heavy lifting. But in terms of the actual property, I always think that, as Ben does a little cough there with his allergy, I think that there is a sub-note to location doing 80% of the heavy lifting, and that is if you get the property wrong, you can undo the entire 80%. We've seen that time and time again when someone's actually bought in an investment grade location and they bought down the lower end of that scale that we're talking either medium density or high density, and they just undid all of the good work in terms of the buying. So it's important now, even though it represents 20% of the cream, you still got to get it right.
Absolutely, mate. And that's where we move into this property types. So let's sort of pack it from the most to least scarce items, the vintage, and that is the period character handcrafted homes of yesteryear. Mm. So the Edwardians, the Victorians, and the bungalows, that combination of style, elegance, and when you walk into it, the broader, wider hallways, the 15-foot ceilings,
the craftsmanship,
everything like that speaks to the majority of the Australian market who wanted to buy that. I mean, if you did a sample test, we talk about mainstream appeal, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, that's where the mainstream appeal lives.
Yeah, agreed. It's interesting, I've got a client this week, a mutual client of ours, Ben, who I'm asking, he's asking me to buy him an asset. And culturally, being Asian culture, typically would favour contemporary style. But once we started talking about, because the budget was $1 million to buy an investment property, and once we started talking about the beautiful period homes and the locations, he was so excited about what could be at that price point and what he could see. So even culturally, where they favour a certain area, once you see some of these beautiful, scarce assets that you can buy in the locations that are closer to the CBD, is amazing. So period and character in a freestanding. So whenever we stand out the front of a house, it's always freestanding is first. The more land, the better. And then you'll go down to, okay, if I can't afford freestanding, will I go semi-detached? And then, you know, some totally in the, no good common walls in total.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go from period freestanding right through to period with common walls.
Well, again, it cross links back into our buyer's decision quadrant, isn't it? So once we understand area, then that, you know, we have a budget. That's our budget. We know the area. It's about land size.
Yeah.
And so if you can get the combination of land size and character, it's the bee's knees.
So I guess really at the top of the tree is you're as far back as you can go, the Edwardian, the Victorians, if we're in Brisbane, the real stately style Queenslander homes.
The proper Queenslanders, the ones where you just jaw drop.
Beautiful verandas, in the beautiful location. So they're Nirvana.
Yep.
And then a bit later on, you had the Californian bungalows being built. So it'd be fair to say that most people, nothing wrong with bungalows, but most people would probably, if given the choice, would choose the Edwardian, Victorian, stately Queenslander first, before the bungalow. But personally, I really like the bungalows.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I own a cow bungalow, a 1927 brick cow bungalow. So I have a love affair with them as well. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't knock back an Edwardian or a Victorian in Middle Park or something like that. That would certainly be, one, if I had the checkbook, I'd certainly wander down there. And then we go into the post-wars. So they've still got a bit of minimalistic character to them. I mean, some people mightn't say that they've got strong owner-occupier appeal, but what you love about those weatherboards and that they're very easy to craft into, the open area of the back, so the lean-to, building that out and getting that sort of done. So there's still some interest in that because usually they're in the better locations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the post-wars aren't out in the 30 kilometres, 40 kilometres out. They're only the 10 or 15 kilometres out, which is when they were built in the 40s and 50s and 60s. That was the edge of the city.
Mm.
So, you know, they still have some appeal.
And the beautiful blonde brick sort of 1950s triple fronter that you can... I mean, once you put render on those, you put an extension out the back, usually go up. You've still got the big block of land, like you say.
Yep.
Location, if we go back, is proximity to CBD is a good thing. And then we probably go into the unit space.
Yep.
Art Deco units probably trump the 60s and 70s style of unit. But for me personally, I tend to favour as an investment, the 50s to 70s flats over the Deco for one reason. It's because they get around a similar style of rent, but I have to pay a premium emotional price for a Deco versus a 60s to 70s flat. So purely numbers-wise, I favour them for an investment. But if I'm from an owner-occupier appeal, you walk in, you see the ornate fittings, you see the usually one of six or really small.
The Decos are going to give you that bigger capital growth, but again, if your situation is that you need better yield, with the drag up growth that you're going to get out of the 60s, 70s flats, that makes sense to me completely. Now, one thing for the listeners, don't then go and think that I can go and buy an Art Deco apartment in a middle ring suburb. Now, some of those areas were around in the sort of 20s, 30s, those suburbs, but you've got to understand that the Art Decos have got to be brought closer to the city. So come back to overlay it back with your area analysis. And in some cases, those Art Decos and even the 50s to 70s flats, they will perform better than buying a house in, say, Cranbourne or somewhere out wide, in a new greenfield area. So other areas of, potentially even Logan, those types of areas, which are just still no scarcity.
Yeah, and no income story.
Yeah, and so a lot of people think bang for their buck. They make this chronic mistake where they think, I can go out and buy a four-bedroom, two-bathroom house, add in the burbs for $350, $400, and if it's Sydney, it's maybe $650. Or I can buy an Art Deco for $750 in Paddington or some area around King's Cross and that type of thing. Trust me, that Art Deco apartment will perform better than that house out in Blackburn or anything like that. Blackburn? What am I talking about? Blackburn? Why am I saying Blackburn?
Which city?
Sydney. Bankstown.
Bankstown.
Sorry. Apologies, listeners.
You're thinking black. You're doing mixed metaphor. Blacktown as well.
I was. Yeah. Crazy.
And then townhouses and villas. Again, if you're moving down that rung, if you can't afford those others, townhouses and villas means you move a bit further out. You're still going to stay scarcity in number. So when I buy a townhouse, I want it to be one of five tops.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
In some cases, if it's in the right location. Recently, we bought one in a very blue chip suburb of Brisbane that had eight. But because to be in that postcode made a difference. But all things being equal, you want to stick around that sort of scarcity of number, because on the patch of dirt, I want to get as much land attributed to my townhouse as I possibly can, rather than a smaller piece.
Yeah, that one's a really important one for me, Bryce. That's about sort of telling the listeners that if you bought a townhouse or a villa in the better location, it's going to do better than buying the house another 15 or 20 kilometres out.
Agreed.
That's the message for this one here. It's like, again, you've got to overlay townhouse villa into the actual location mix first.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just go out and buy townhouses and villas just anywhere, because it won't work.
Well, this matrix that we're going through is assuming you did location first.
Correct. Absolutely. Good reiteration of that.
So then the next one is just the house that my parents grew up in, the 70s to 90s, brick veneer, freestanding home on a quarter acre block in suburbia. Again, it's probably interesting for a few of our listeners, even if they're listening to this podcast for the first time today or only a few, that we've talked about apartments and units and townhouses before we've gone back to a house. So it's interesting that we always say get the location first, mm-hmm. buy the property second. And so it's interesting for some people that might challenge them.
Yeah, because early 70s, that's what our parents wanted to do. Yep. Even if they worked in the city was a dead zone back in the early 70s. So they got in their car, there was no traffic. They went out and they bought a house in the new suburban block because that was all the rage. You know, we were following TV out of America, you know, and everyone lived out in the suburbs. And then obviously the world's changed, density, population, those types of things. So those types of assets are still better than the new stock, but they don't stack up.
We're still following our TV out of America, so the Gen Ys still want to do what Seinfeld are doing and How I Met Your Mother. They want to live in apartments, so it's important to understand the generations. And then we round it off. There's going to be no surprise to long-term listeners of our podcast that coming in at second last is medium-density apartments and last is high-density apartments. So it's no secret that we say the ones that are going to suffer most in the downturn are high-density apartments with high-density zoning.
No scarcity. Simple as that. But nothing more really needs to be added.
No, I agree. So there you go, folks. We always talk about those three filters of owner-occupier appeal. We think we've covered that pretty well. Investment grade. We've covered parts of investment grade in this discussion, but it's also about what sort of scarcity. So it's scarcity of land and it's also scarcity of property. So if you're about to go and buy an investment property this week, you're going to auction, you're in the middle of a negotiation, hopefully that helps you in determining which one you should be buying. And don't be overly concerned around the sentiment of the market if you're following the principles that we're talking about today, because investment property is a very, very good long-term asset if you get it right.
That's it, mate. No, you said it well. Nothing more for me to add.
Understanding scarcity in property was what today was all about. So as per usual, we ask a favour every now and then. If you are enjoying our podcast, and we are getting some tremendous feedback, so we appreciate that, if you could just tell one friend, please just let them know to log on and check out our podcast. That'd be great so that we could pass the message around, so that we can stop people doing what Ben said in episode number one, which is people making dumb decisions around property investment. Anything to add to that, mate?
No. I was speaking at the Sydney Property Buyers Show a couple of weeks back. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of clients come up and say good day, some of our Sydney clients, which was lovely of them. And they were a Spanish couple. Well, not Spanish, South American, but they obviously speak Spanish over there. And so Margie and Ricardo, this goes out to you. You told me not to just do the adios, but to actually do a more deeper meaning. Then you had a bit of an argument about which was the right way to say it.
So this makes me really nervous, Ivers, because it means that now Ben's got some feedback around this sign-off. It's only encouraging and fueling the fire.
No,
we were going to retire it at Christmas time.
We are still going to retire it at Christmas time. There's no doubt about that.
All right, folks. Well, there you have it, the scarcity factor when it comes to property as we sign off for the week. We hope you have a great week this week. And until next week, Ben.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Ooh. There you go, Margie and Ricardo. Let us know.
Hopefully I got it right.
And for the rest of you Spanish folks who want to let us know if he nailed that, you're very welcome to do that. But until next week, it's hasta
luego.
And next for me and you, mate, it's hasta mañana.
Hasta mañana.
Okay, mate. See you guys. See you next week.